Welcome from me, Colleen McLaughlin, and welcome to the Faculty of Education, where I am, and to this lecture on action research. It's called Creating Knowledge About Education. And the areas that I'm going to cover are there for you to see, and I'll take them section by section, and hopefully you'll be able to follow them with your handout. Well, welcome to the faculty, and what's interesting about the Faculty of Education is that it has a long tradition of working with action research, or practitioner research, it's sometimes called, or teachers as researchers. And the tradition is around people like, in particular, one man, Lawrence Stenhouse, who worked at the University of East Anglia, with whom we've had, in the past, strong connections. And Stenhouse was the first person to coin this phrase, teacher as a researcher. In addition, here at the faculty, we've got two other people who were very prominent in this work, two professors, Donald McIntyre, who did a lot to promote this work, and Jean Ruddock, who also did a lot of work about not just researching practice, but particularly listening to students, called student voice work over here. The other thing we've really got a history of doing is working in partnership with schools, working in partnership with local authorities, and in all that we do, whether we're working with a school, whether we're working on a master's degree, our work has as a central element of it teachers researching their own practice. And it really is this key idea. The key idea is that research is not something which just goes in a book. It is something which should inform practice, and it is something which should help to develop the work of schools. It should be informing action, hence the phrase action research. Now, let me come then to the first section of what we're going to talk about, which is this challenge of developing practice. One of the things we know is that you cannot develop classroom practice without the commitment of teachers. Policymakers all over the world try to sidestep the teacher, what I've called making something teacher-proof, something that doesn't need the teacher. And that is an impossible aim, because the teacher is always the person who controls the learning in the classroom. Not shapes all of it, but actually controls the processes, the curriculum, and the pedagogy in the classroom. So you can't get around teachers. So very pragmatically, if you want to change practice, you have to work with teachers, because they are in charge in the classroom. And if you don't have their hearts and minds, then not much can happen. The other thing we know about reform is that teachers are highly resilient. And what I mean by that is even in the face of change, teachers will hang on to their practices. I know as an ex-teacher in a school that I would never change my practice unless I was absolutely convinced it would make life better for the pupils and also for me. If I had to risk doing something differently and feel insecure and lacking in confidence, I would be less likely to do that unless I was really committed to it. The other thing is that most reform, and particularly policymakers, underestimate the complexity of the classroom. Classrooms are very, very complex places in which teachers are having thousands of interactions in a day, trying to control multiple things going on in their classroom. Then, so there's just the classroom and the behaviour, and then you add on top of that learning as a complex process. You can see that you have to have the most experienced professionals helping to understand practice in order to improve it. Now, In Kazakhstan, I don't know exactly how new this idea, but in Europe, the idea of teachers learning once they've qualified to teach is a fairly new idea, and by new I mean 10, 20 years old. In my lifetime as a teacher, which is 30, 40 years, at the beginning of my teaching career, it was not accepted that people would learn on the job. Learning was something that people did at the beginning of their teaching experience, not later on in their teaching experience. So this idea that teachers should research their own practice and learn about their own practice is also a very new and challenging idea. And for some teachers, it's hard to bear because they believe that's something only inexperienced colleagues do. So let's look then. Why should teachers therefore get involved? We've said that developing practice is incredibly complicated. But why use this action research method? Well, one of the quotes that Stenhouse said was, "It is teachers who in the end will change the world of the school by understanding it." And this is the idea that as professionals, it is up to us to make the most of what's going on in education, to improve education, and we do that only by understanding it, by understanding that complexity that I was talking about before. And one of the best ways to understand what's happening in the classroom is to try to change it. It's only when you try to change something that you begin to understand the dynamic of what was happening and also the complexity of what was happening and some of the barriers to it. So one reason for engaging in research is to improve practice, but the other way is to understand it more deeply by trying to improve it. Research has traditionally been undertaken by outsiders, people outside of the classroom. People like me, based in a university, we may be ex-teachers, but we're not based in the daily life of a school now. And we often are the people who are asked to do research. Well, this idea of action research is that it should be the people who are inside the classroom who do the research. It should be they who create the professional knowledge. So that we are harnessing the knowledge of the teacher and the pupils. The pupils are experts in the life of the school and of the classroom and in terms of what is actually happening to them on a day-to-day basis. So by doing this, we think we strengthen both teacher learning and school development. And of course, what I should put in there really is pupil learning, which is what I would include under the phrase of school development. Okay, so let's look then at this, let's look a bit more deeply at this idea of the teacher as a researcher. What do I mean by research here? Well, what I mean is, and again I'm going back to Lawrence Stenhouse, Stenhouse described research as systematic inquiry made public. So I want to unpick those words a little bit. Systematic in that it's not just something you do when you feel like it. It has to have some rigor to it. It has to have some validity to it. So if I want to see what pupils feel about something I've introduced into the classroom, I can't just ask them when I feel like it. I have to ask them systematically. I have to have systematic questions to use to ask them. And I have to ask them regularly. I can't just ask them at the beginning or just at the end, because we know that things change over time. So it's systematic, it's inquiry, and I'll talk later about how we might do some of that. And it's made public. By that, I don't mean it has to be written up in a book or a lecture, but that some point the teacher who's undertaking the research is sharing that research with a community of other people. And that could be colleagues. And those colleagues are going to critically reflect on the findings. That is what makes research different from opinion. Research is a process that's systematic and rigorous, and it's something that undergoes critical feedback. So what Stenhouse said, as you can see on this slide, is that what teacher research involves is a commitment to question your own teaching. And that is not comfortable if you're not used to doing that. But I can tell you it's incredibly exciting once you start to do it. The second is, so we've got this commitment, I want to do it, I'm ready, I'm open to doing it. But the second thing is also the skills to study it. Whether I study it by keeping a reflective journal, whether I study it by videoing something, whether I study it by having somebody observe my practice. And the third element is that I am willing to question things. And if you've been doing something in the same way for a very long time, that again is quite a big commitment. The desire and the commitment to question your own practice and even to test a theory. And one of the great founders of Action Research, a man called Kurt Lewin, said, there's nothing as practical as a good theory. And the word theory comes from a Greek word meaning to see. So the idea is, I study my practice, I'm committed to it, but also I start to form some theories about what might be going on. I might even use other people's theories to see if they can help me illuminate my practice. Okay, so I hope I've given you up to now some sort of rationale for why you should use action research. What I want to do now is to look at the action research process itself. And this comes from Kurt Lewin, who was in many ways the founder of action research. And he, like many people after the Second World War, was so appalled by what human beings did in that war, he said we need a new sort of research. Research that actually studies things in their real context and which makes a difference to action. So many of these people, like Kurt Lewin, came out of that desire to improve life, to make us more human and better. I've described action research on this slide as a systematic inquiry, as Stenhouse did, into practice in a school or a classroom, setting out with the aim of improving or understanding practice or informing decision making. So there is this inextricable connection between research and practice. Now, almost all action research is described as a spiral, as a cycle, one cycle leading into the next cycle. And the cycle of action research is here. First, we often start with a problem. Why are my pupils not enjoying this? Why is this pupil not actually learning so well? And such issues. So we often start by reflecting. We can start anywhere. Well, we can't start anywhere in the cycle. We're likely to start with reflection. So I start reflecting, and then I might plan some research, or I might plan an action. I take an action, then I reflect on that action, I observe that action, I collect some data, some evidence to help me think further about it. Then I reflect, and I go around the cycle again. And this next slide shows that process in a different way. But it is that process of identifying a problem, thinking about a problem, and then moving on to action, planning. And of course, all of this is made easier if I'm not doing it alone. If I'm having the chance to reflect with somebody, it can be a colleague, it can be an outside expert, it doesn't matter who, but somebody that I can take along with me, and who's going to critically question me about my assumptions. So that's the action research process that probably you're going to be going through. Now, what I've put up here on this slide are some quotes from teachers who, after they underwent an action research process into their own practice. And these are some of the things they said. The first was, They didn't just feel like the object of research. We no longer felt like research fodder, but professionals in control of our own improvement, having a voice in local and national decisions. The research has moved us into our own back garden. So there's a lot going on there. They're saying it makes them feel more like professionals, but also that it makes them feel more involved in decision-making, both in the school, the classroom, and perhaps even nationally, because they may be contributing to research that goes and is made public. The second quote, it has made me focus much more on the diversity of learners. It has heightened my awareness of the range of learners. I'm more responsive to their needs, is something we often find in action research, that when teachers start engaging with students, talking to them about their learning, what happens is the teacher, instead of taking a teacher view of the classroom, suddenly starts to take a student view of the classroom. And that changes things very, very much. And actually is often the most exciting thing for many teachers. The third quote, I now look more clinically at what I'm going to be doing with them, offering opportunities for the students to perhaps question a bit more, and I'm trying in my own turn to perhaps listen to those questions rather than expecting things to happen by divine right, is the teacher becomes much more constructively uncertain. So the teacher's open to feedback, open to listening to what the students say, rather than, this is the way it's going to be, this is the way I've planned it, why is that not student behaving according to plan? And this involves a different set of skills and somewhat of a different position for teachers. Okay, so that sounds quite simple. I can tell you it isn't when you try to put it into practice. And the hardest part is the beginning of the action research cycle. Trying to give yourself a question or to define the problem in a way that makes it manageable and realistic is really very, very hard to do. So the first part of the process is I might have a hunch that something's not going well in the classroom, or I might have a specific problem. To turn that into something you can research, to turn that into something you can get useful data or feedback on, is often quite... It's a process that is uncomfortable because you're constantly having to say, is that right? Is that what I really mean? Is that exactly what I want to do? And that, I would argue, is the point at which you need to be talking to somebody, where somebody can be your critical friend, can be your friend and support you, but can also ask you questions and say, well, yes, that's a good question, but it's a very big question. How are you going to find out about that? Those sorts of useful questions. So here's a set of questions that I think might be useful for you. First question is, what exactly is it I want to know? And why? The why question is very important, because the why question should be an educationally worthwhile question. So, for example, making students repeat something absolutely accurately as an aim is something I'd want to say, well, why do you want to do that? Is there an educational justification for that? If there is, then fine, go ahead. But we need also to debate the worth of the question. How will I find out? That's often quite a very difficult one. Will I use groups of pupils to talk to? Will I observe? Will I ask somebody else to observe? Will I use questionnaires? How is it I'm going to actually find out about it? And often, the things that seem most like research, for example, a questionnaire, are not really helpful. If I want to find out what pupils are doing and why they think it, it's much more useful to have a conversation with them or an interview or a group discussion than to give them a questionnaire. Because in a questionnaire, you're dependent on people writing lots and lots and lots of things if it's going to be very, very useful. Will it be good enough information is another question. What will I do with it? Will I share it with other people? Is it just for me? Will I share it with the pupils? Who's going to know about what I did? And the other question to ask yourself is, how can I get feedback? Who can I get some feedback from? Who can support me in this process? As well as, who should I tell that I'm doing this? If you don't tell your colleagues or your leaders in your school, strange things can happen. The pupils will tell them, because they'll know it's going on. So make sure that you have informed people who need to be informed. So here's the process then I'm putting forward as one that you can go through. There are others. There are other useful sets of questions. But here's a set of questions that really summarise what I've just said and that I hope will be of use to you. Okay. What we do know is that we know that it's not necessarily going to make life better for you if you do action research. And we know that there are some things in a school that are really helpful to teachers doing action research. So the first is that there's some commitment to doing it from the school and from the leaders in the school and from colleagues. That there's some commitment to the topic you're researching, that's seen as important by people. Even more helpful is to establish a small collaborative group, even if it's just three of you, whether it's in your own department, whether it's working with a methodologist or somebody like that in the school, or a professional development group. It's also, I think, really good if you're committed to your own learning to share what you're doing with your colleagues or other people, for example, in other schools through the Centres of Excellence. So think about how will you share your knowledge. And my biggest piece of advice, small questions, small steps. Don't plan a 5-year research project for your first project. And it's always helpful to have support from someone who knows about action research, who can help you out when you're having a problem. Right, I'm going to finish, really, this last section of the lecture by giving you an example of a piece of research that we undertook with teachers in 12 local secondary schools. We discussed what we wanted to research together, and the teachers felt that the most important question they wanted to debate was what we called pupil engagement. How engaged are pupils in learning, and how do we see that? So the questions that we came up with are here. First, what do teachers understand by engagement? So, for example, one of the things we know from theory is that teachers often think that the most well-behaved pupils are the most engaged in learning. And that's not necessarily the case. Some pupils are very, very good at looking engaged and staying out of trouble, but actually not doing very much learning. So that was one question. What do teachers understand by engagement? What do pupils understand by engagement? Is it the same thing? And what informs or shapes their understandings of engagements? What makes pupils think what they think is engagement? And what makes teachers think what they think is engagement? What does it look like? Where does that understanding come from? And what happens when you look at it in action? Now, that's quite a difficult set of questions. The first couple of three questions are probably quite easy to get at. So what we did is we held what we call focus groups or discussion groups of teachers, 6 teachers. We chose teachers from different departments because in a secondary school, teachers' understandings are very often shaped by their subject as well. So we had an art teacher, a drama teacher, a mathematician, and an English teacher, I'm thinking of one group, and a technology teacher. And we had focus groups of pupils. And we asked them, we said, finish this sentence. The beginning of the sentence for the teachers was, I know my students are engaged when, and they had to finish it. Just write endings of sentences. And then in the group, we discussed them. And then we asked them to rank them. And that was really, really interesting because there were very different understandings dependent on subject in particular. The drama teacher in particular is used to using very different methods from a mathematician. So engagement looked and is very different. And we did the same with the pupils. Then we got a very brave teacher to volunteer to have a lesson recorded with the class that we were using for the discussions. And then we showed the video back to the teacher herself, only her, nobody else at that stage, and said, stop the video when you think there's an example of pupils being really engaged in learning. Stop it and tell us why you think they're engaged. What is it that you're seeing there that tells you what they're being engaged, that those pupils are engaged in learning? And we did the same thing for the students. Well, you won't be surprised to know that there were some differences between teachers and students. At the beginning of this process, teachers emphasized obedience. So when pupils were being well-behaved, doing what they were told, they assumed that the students were engaged in learning. One of the biggest shifts came from just the process of the teacher watching the video. And what happened was the teacher would watch the video and say, for example, I'm thinking of one bit of video where there was a boy who was not behaving easily for the teacher, and the teacher assumed he wasn't engaged. When she watched it back, and she was working very hard during that lesson to engage him, when she watched it back, she questioned some of the things she thought, and she said, he doesn't look like he's learning, but I think looking at this again, I realize he is. So one of the things we saw was just the act of doing the research and watching the video shifted teachers' understandings. The second thing that really shifted understandings was the discussion group. And we were amazed by the response of the teachers who said, why don't we have these discussions normally in school? I have learnt so much from my colleagues and what they do and the stories they tell about engaging pupils. I never talked as a mathematician, I never talked to a drama teacher. I should be doing this. This is really exciting. The third thing we found out was that not all teachers, again, you won't be surprised, but not all teachers are the same. So some teachers didn't emphasize obedience, some teachers did. Some teachers emphasized learning, some teachers emphasized behavior, some teachers emphasized questioning. There were very different, what I've called mindsets here. What was clear was that both the teachers and the students said the most important thing is relationships. Relationships, relationships, relationships. Students said, we will be engaged if we have a good relationship with that teacher. If we don't, it's harder to engage in learning. So the classroom as a human place, as a setting for learning, came out as very, very important. And I think I've covered that last point about teachers listening to teachers in other departments. And here's what some of the things that happened as a result of that action research project. Teachers started to use conversations with students as part of their normal teaching. That's one of the things that happened. Strategies were shared within the school across departments because they realized that was such a useful activity. Some teachers really built in getting regular feedback on their lessons as part of every lesson. And we shared it across the 12 schools. So I hope that I've been able to give you a reason for doing action research, a reason for taking it seriously. I hope a reason for seeing it is very exciting. And I wish you well in your action research project with your very good trainers in Elaine and Faye and others. So I wish you very, very well with your new action research projects and look forward to hearing about them. And here's a list of some resources. There's now quite a lot online, both in terms of YouTube videos and online free resources, some of which I've listed up there. Thanks very much.